Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Just thinking about what's happening, just being alive, trying to stay protected and safe and alive in Gaza is a form of resistance. I try to stay strong in front of the camera, but behind it, I'm breaking. Just like Gaza is breaking now.
As Israel escalates its bombardment of Gaza City, we'll speak to Al Jazeera reporter Hani Mahmoud, who's just evacuated from Gaza City. Then Microsoft has blocked Israel's use of its technology for mass surveillance of Palestinians. We'll speak to a former Microsoft worker who was fired for speaking out.
After over a year of sustained organizing, pressure, and campaigning with No Asher for Apartheid, Microsoft today became the first U.S. company to withhold some services to the Israeli military since the genocide. This not only proves the effectiveness of our sustained campaign, but it also motivates us to continue applying that pressure until all of our demands are met and until Microsoft and all tech companies stop being complicit in the genocide of Palestinian people.
Then to the Deputy Foreign Minister of Cuba. As Latin American leaders condemn a new U.S. bombing campaign in the Caribbean, mainly aimed at Venezuela.
The interception and destruction of boats, the extrajudicial killing of civilians, the interception of fishing vessels and aggressive actions by the United States in the Eastern Caribbean create a dangerous situation that threatens regional peace and security.
But first, to the investigative reporter Ken Klippenstein on Trump's war on the left following the assassination of Charlie Kirk and this week's deadly shooting at an immigration jail in Dallas that killed one migrant, leaving two critically injured. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A federal grand jury has indicted former FBI Director James Comey on two criminal charges, which include making a false statement to Congress and the obstruction of a congressional proceeding during his testimony back in 2020 about Russian interference in the 2016 election. Thursday's indictment of Comey comes just days before a statute of limitations on the charges was due to expire, and less than a week after President Trump installed Lindsey Halligan, his personal lawyer, as the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia to replace her predecessor, Eric Siebert, who resigned under pressure from Trump because he refused to bring charges against Comey. Here's Comey responding to his indictment.
My family and I have known for years that there are costs to standing up to Donald Trump, but we couldn't imagine ourselves living any other way. We will not live on our knees, and you shouldn't either. Somebody that I love dearly recently said that fear is the tool of a tyrant, and she's right. But I'm not afraid.
James Comey's son-in-law, Troy Edwards Jr., resigned from his position as a national security prosecutor in the Eastern District of Virginia immediately after the indictment was announced. Earlier this year, the Justice Department fired Comey's daughter, who Comey was just referring to in his video, Maureen Comey, for her position as a prosecutor in the Southern District of New York. She is sued, claiming she was fired for political reasons. Maureen Comey successfully prosecuted Jeffrey Epstein co-conspirator, convicted sex offender Ghislaine Maxwell, and Comey was involved in the investigation of Jeffrey Epstein. Meanwhile, the New York Times is reporting the Justice Department is calling on federal prosecutors to investigate the billionaire George Soros's philanthropic group, the Open Society Foundations. The DOJ's directive lists possible charges ranging from arson to material support for terrorism. In response, Soros called out the Trump administration for, quote, politically motivated attacks on civil society, unquote. Israel's military has issued new evacuation orders for neighborhoods of Gaza City as Israeli ground forces push deeper into the Gaza Strip's largest urban area. Israeli attacks have killed at least 29 Palestinians since dawn, 11 of them civilians seeking food, including two children. Many Palestinians continue to resist Israel's forced displacement, moving from one place to another within Gaza City rather than leaving entirely. This is Samia Al-Samri, a Palestinian mother whose family sheltered at a tent after an Israeli bomb flattened her home, killing her 9-year-old son.
My son was martyred in front of my eyes, and I could not carry him. I was worried that my children would be martyred as well, and I was injured. My son over here was also injured. I suffered. That's why I became worried about my children. Whenever there is a threat, I run away. I get scared, carry my children, and run.
After headlines, we'll speak with Al Jazeera reporter Hani Mahmoud, who has just left Gaza City. Israeli strikes bombarded Yemen's capital Sana'a on Thursday, killing at least 8 people and wounding 142. Israel's repeatedly targeted residential areas.
They have targeted residential neighborhoods that is known to all people, Al-Raqqa neighborhood. They only frighten women and children. They only make us stronger and more steadfast. And we say to Netanyahu, we swear to tear out his eye.
The attack comes a day after the Houthis claimed responsibility for a drone attack on Eilat in southern Israel, injuring 22 people. Earlier this month, Israeli strikes on Sana'a and the province of Al-Jaf killed more than 40 people and was the largest single attack on journalists the world has seen in 16 years. The president of the Palestinian Authority has condemned Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip as a war of genocide, destruction, starvation, and displacement, unquote. Mahmoud Abbas made the remarks in a video address Thursday to the United Nations General Assembly.
Today we say clearly, peace cannot be achieved if justice is not achieved, and there can be no justice if Palestine is not freed.
Abbas said he was ready to work with world leaders to implement a peace plan announced by France on Monday. He condemned Hamas's actions October 7, 2023, and said the group would not have a role to play in any future governments of an independent state of Palestine. Abbas's UN speech came as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu flew to New York, where he's set to address the General Assembly today. For the first time, Netanyahu's flight route was diverted over the Mediterranean Sea to avoid overflying a country that would be obliged to arrest him. An international criminal court warrant seeks Netanyahu's arrest for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Gaza, including using starvation as a weapon of war. This morning, protesters are gathering at Times Square for a march to the UN demanding the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu. Microsoft says it's barred the Israeli military from using technology it's used to spy on millions of Palestinian civilian phone calls made each day in Gaza and the occupied West Bank and stored in Microsoft's vast Azure cloud computing platform. It's an unprecedented victory for No Azure for Apartheid, a group of current and former Microsoft workers demanding an end to Microsoft's work with the Israeli military. But in a statement, the group called Microsoft's actions insufficient, noting the vast majority of Microsoft's tech sales to the Israeli military continue to be untouched. Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with Hossam Nasser. He is a fired Microsoft worker who is an organizer with No Azure for Apartheid. Russia's foreign ministry has ratcheted up tensions with NATO, accusing the Western military alliance of waging war in Russia. Speaking at a G20 conference in the sidelines of the UN General Assembly here in New York Thursday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said, quote, NATO and the European Union want to declare, in fact, have already declared a real war on my country and are directly participating in it, unquote. His comments come days after President Trump suggested Ukraine could claw back its territory taken by Russia. Meanwhile, Denmark reported to NATO that state actors are responsible for drone incursions that shut down two airports. That's according to Latvia's foreign minister speaking to Reuters. Germany's defense minister, Boris Pistorius, went further and blamed Russia for the drone incursions.
The suspicion is obvious. This is part of Vladimir Putin's strategy, without us being able to say anything concrete in this case. But it is part of what we experience every day. We are not at war, but we are also no longer at complete peace. We are being attacked, both in disinformation campaigns and now also by drones.
The Trump administration's negotiating a $20 billion financial bailout for Argentina amidst a worsening economic crisis, largely due to austerity measures enacted by embattled far-right Argentine president and Trump ally Javier Milei. Critics say the move contradicts Trump's so-called America First policies by offering a lifeline to Milei ahead of Argentina's midterm elections in October, which are critical to Milei retaining power. Here in New York, outrage is mounting after a federal agent in plain clothes was caught on video shoving and pushing an Ecuadorian mother to the ground as her two young children watched and screamed in panic inside 26 Federal Plaza in Manhattan. Video shows the woman crying as she begs authorities not to take her husband, who was detained during the family's asylum hearing at the federal building. The woman is heard telling agents in Spanish they're going to kill him if her husband is deported to Ecuador. The agent is also heard mocking the woman, telling her adios repeatedly, the Spanish word for goodbye, before ramming her against the wall and shoving her to the floor. The family reportedly arrived from Ecuador last year. This came as protesters gathered outside 26 Federal Plaza Thursday, where immigrants have described being imprisoned for days or weeks without due process in overcrowded cells, without access to medication and proper sanitation, being forced to sleep on the concrete floor and left hungry without outside contact. This is New York Assembly member Jessica Gonzalez Rojas.
We are done with this administration and their cruelty. We will demand that ICE is out of New York, and we need to fight to make sure that we are passing laws here in New York that will protect our immigrant neighbors. Because we are all the child of immigrants.
Amazon has reached a $2.5 billion settlement with the Federal Trade Commission over allegations the company tricked users into paying for Prime membership. Amazon's set to give $1 billion to the FTC and another $1.5 billion back to customers impacted by the company's practices. Amazon still faces a legal case with the FTC over allegations the company is illegally stifling competition in the e-commerce market. And President Trump signed an executive order Thursday that would allow TikTok to keep operating in the U.S. The order enables a group of investors to buy the American operations of the app from the Chinese company ByteDance. China still has to approve the deal. The company Oracle will reportedly take over security operations and cloud computing for TikTok's U.S. firm. Oracle's co-founder and chair, Larry Ellison, is a decades-long history with the Republican Party and has frequented Trump's Mar-a-Lago for dinners and has met Trump in the Oval Office. He's also an ally of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, donating money to Israel's military through the nonprofit Friends of the Israel Defense Forces. Meanwhile, the United Arab Emirates-backed investment firm MGX is also reportedly set to win a major stake in TikTok's U.S. business. Back in May, MGX made a $2 billion investment in the Trump family's cryptocurrency business, World Liberty Financial. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to Gaza. Israel's military has issued new evacuation orders for neighborhoods of Gaza City as Israeli ground forces push deeper into the Gaza Strip's largest urban area. Israeli attacks have killed over 30 Palestinians since dawn, 11 of them civilians seeking food, including two children. Many Palestinians continue to resist Israel's forced displacement, moving from one place to another within Gaza City rather than leaving entirely. As Israel escalates its bombardment of Gaza City, we're joined now by Al Jazeera reporter Hani Mahmoud, who has just left Gaza City. Hani, welcome to Democracy Now! You are still, of course, in Gaza. Can you talk about why you left Gaza City?
Amy, thank you so much for having me on this particularly amazing show. I'm a fan of Democracy Now! And just a quick reminder, we met about 10 years ago at Montana State University, and I had a copy of your book, Out of Madness, and you signed it for me. Very, very amazing moments to meet with you and listen to your lecture at that time. So moving to your question, we did not leave Gaza City until it was extremely difficult for us to stay around the office premise that we were operating it from. Israeli ongoing bombardment has reached as far as the heart of Gaza City, where the majority of displaced families were sheltering after they were forcibly pushed out of their homes from the eastern part of the city, from the northern western, the northern central, and from the southern west, southern central and the southern western part of Gaza City in a form that resembled sandwiching people in the middle and keep pushing them toward the western part of the city. The day we decided to leave, a vehicle carrying displaced families just passed through the office premise we were staying in, was struck three times by the Israeli military. It panicked the whole area. The explosion just struck the entire neighborhood, caused a state of panic and fear. And quite honestly, that was very threatening to everyone in that particular neighborhood, where people start to moving one street away, one neighborhood away from that particular area. And that's only the tip of the of everything that we experienced over the past month. That was just one example of the ongoing unfolding horror that across Gaza City people experience on daily basis, from targeting residential towers into displacement sites, into destroying public facilities and infrastructure, critical infrastructures, hospitals and other means of lives across Gaza City have been completely destroyed, to the point people started to feel that there's no point of staying there as long as there are none of these elements existing to support their existence in that area. Start moving either one street away, one neighborhood away, or simply take the coastal road in search of safety in central and southern part of Gaza Strip.
Hani, you are a face that is known around the world of Al Jazeera English, as you've been reporting for the last years. As you move outside of Gaza City right now, can you talk about, Gaza City now, hundreds of thousands of people have been forced south. 1 million people live there. What are they telling you as they pass you moving south?
Well, Amy, let me start with this. People feel now it's a permanent state of displacement. They have been on this constant sense of a state of displacement for the past 23 months from one place to other. And I'm not exaggerating when to say that literally people have been herded from one area to another, and the majority of them are pushed into central and southern part of the strip. The area itself has never been prepared, has never been designed to absorb so many people at once here. We're talking about not just double or triple, quadruple the number of people who are residing in central and southern part of the strip. Now, apart from the fact that major part of this area is not safe at all, over the course of the past week, we've seen on daily basis displaced families within their arrival, just hours of their arrivals to the areas where they're sheltering, they've been attacked by the drone strikes and they were killed here. So this is not safe for them. People are being basically told, in order to avoid being bombed in Gaza, you need to move south. And as soon as they move south, they're getting bombed and they're chased by the drones, by the quadcopter, by the fighter jets that each explosion technically not just destroy an entire neighborhood, but pushes people into further internal displacement. When it comes to people here, it's just the exhaustion, the trauma, the constant sense of permanently displaced, the uncertainty that you will ever see your home back in Gaza ever again. The fact that every displacement carries its unique burden. This time is the hardest time because 8 months ago, I was at the same exact spot here reporting about the excitement and the happiness on people's faces as they return to their homes in Gaza and the northern part of the strip. They took the very road here. This road at some point represented hope and represented the slow, quiet, back to normal life, sort of, now has become a trail of exhaustion, a trail of ongoing, unfolding trauma here. The lack of basic necessities, we talk about still, Gaza is going through a famine. Food is not available at an amount that is sufficient enough to respond to the greater challenges created by months of devastation, destruction, enforced dehydration, and starvation. Whatever you see in the market now does not address the deepening humanitarian crisis. Sugary stuff and stuff that are not necessarily important for survivor are flooding the market. But we're talking about sources of protein, fresh produce like vegetables. These are not available. And if they are available, they are available at a very small quantity at a skyrocketing price that is beyond anyone's financial capabilities now. People have not been on a regular payroll. You know, public sector are not getting paid regularly. Private sectors have been completely destroyed. So people are left to food stamps and food coupons, whatever parcels they have been able to collect. But the worst of this is, over the past 3 days, we did field reports. We reached to areas that are considered, for local residents of central and southern part of the Gaza Strip, as remote area, are now filled with displaced families. What's really worrying about these areas, they are far from the city, far from hospitals and clinics and medical points. They're far from water sources or food supplies. So you have, other than that they are displaced and traumatized, they end up walking for 2 kilometers or 3 kilometers in order to get water, in order to get food, and go back to the displacement site. And this is done on a daily basis. Now, the danger with this, it exposes people to aerial surveillance that is basically flooding the area here. The skies of central areas are clouded or are clouded with the drones and fighter jets, and already causing mayhem, causing panic, and causing a greater level of fear, because this place is not even safe for them to stay in. We ran to a family member here who was waiting for a couple days for remaining family members to arrive. And as soon as they arrived, just within 3 hours, 11 members of families who arrived to central area were killed in a single strike. And imagine how is this playing itself out, how is it echoing with people who wants to leave from Gaza into safety, but they hear about this. Of course, they're not going to be encouraged to take the risk because Gaza is devastated and destroyed. And now coming to central area is not different. It's also destroyed and devastated and under many of these attacks as well.
Hani Mahmoud, last month, protests erupted worldwide demanding accountability and justice following Israel's targeted assassination of Al Jazeera correspondent Anas al-Sharif, along with 4 of his colleagues and another journalist outside al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. This is a tribute you and your colleagues at Al Jazeera made for the slain journalists.
Anas, Muhammad, Mu'min, Ibrahim, and Muhammad Nofer. Thank you for everything you have done for us.
They stood in the rubble. They walked through the dust. They bore witness much of the horror, the pain, as well as the resilience of Gaza and across the Gaza Strip.
Anas became the eyes of Gaza and the voice of its suffering. His reporting was not just journalism. It was an act of defiance, a refusal to let the world look away.
He always used to tell us when we used to take a photo, don't show them, I'm short. People get surprised every time they see him because he's so very tiny.
Muhammad Khreqa, I will never forget that. You wanted to learn English in order to spread the news to the Western communities. Ibrahim and Muhammad Nofal, who wanted to get married once the war is over.
Just a few hours before the attack, we chatted a bit, we giggled, we even talked about the plans that we wanted to do right after the genocide is over.
The truth will not be buried. As Anas always says, our coverage will continue.
To our fallen colleagues, your bravery will inspire a generation of journalists to come.
Thank you guys for everything you have done for us. Thank you for the news coverage. Thank you for dedicating your life to tell us the truth.
I wish they never left, and I wish Palestinian journalists were not a target.
To all of them, rest in power. We will never forget you.
An amazing video for that horrific moment. Anas al-Sharif, the well-known Al Jazeera correspondent, killed with three other Al Jazeera colleagues August 11th in that strike on al-Shifa. Mohammed Khreqa, also a correspondent, killed alongside Anas. And you have Ibrahim Zaher and Mohammed Nufal, cameramen, killed in that same strike. Then we go back in time. Mohammed Salama, cameraman for Al Jazeera, killed in a double-tap Israeli attack on Nasser Hospital August 25th. Killings in 2024, Ismail Agul, the Al Jazeera Arab correspondent, killed along with Rami Al-Rifi, July 31st, 2024, died in an Israeli airstrike on their vehicle while covering the killing of the Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in Gaza City, Hamza Dadu. If you can talk about your colleagues and friends and what this means. Honestly, every day as I turn on Al Jazeera and see you at the top of the newscast, I worry the next day if I will see you there.
You know, there is a lot of risk involved in what we are doing, and we recognize this from day one. The Israeli military made it clear that there's no one safe in Gaza City. And I think seeing the acts on the ground, they literally mean that there is no one safe. And it's not just about the journalists. We look at doctors, for example, medical staff being targeted and deliberately killed by the Israeli military, teachers, engineers, what at some point represented the elite educational, intellectual class across the Gaza Strip, including university presidents and the deans of colleges. They were all on the list of the Israeli military, and we were killed systematically. So when we talk about journalists only, it's just one element of so many that is likely in the future to affect how this society is going to progress socially, economically, let alone intellectually, with this large number of people being systematically targeted and killing. When it comes to our colleagues, everyone, as I said, everyone, every one of them did their job to the best of their abilities, telling the truth as it is. And by the way, here on the ground, report everything that we see, and we report everything that comes in front of our eyes. Our cameras are always up with us, and we report it as raw as it is, because there is no room here to change anything. There is no room here to make anything more appealing or to drive sympathy. This is not about driving sympathy. It's about driving a change, because what's going on here is beyond anyone's imagination. It's brutal. It's aggressive. And the fact that it's been happening for the past 23 months, nonstop, just put a huge question mark. Why is it going so for so long and no one is doing anything to stop it? That's what makes it very difficult. And this is, quite honestly, what keeps us doing what we're doing, because we believe the world deserves to learn the truth, to learn about what's going on daily basis, the deliberate destruction of hospitals, of schools, of residential clusters, the mass killing, mass wholesale killing of children. We have in a couple of years from now, we will have a whole generation of amputees, of new crippled young generation because of the